mute yourself. The hashtag is QMOOC, QMOOC. So if you have a question or a comment, put it on Twitter, hashtag QMOOC. Clark Quinn will forward it to us. I'm hoping that we will have a, rarely get to use this one, Bohmian conversation, that we sort of let go of our traditional sales pitches and internal movies and go with the conversation. Just let's take it where we will, and hopefully short bursts responding to one another rather than dialogue, even though it's Bohmian dialogue. I think we're ready to go. So first, why don't we have the briefest of introductions, who you are, where you are, what you have to do with business, what you have to do with MOOCs, a little bit of your MOOC experience, but you know, you can do that in 20 seconds apiece. Bert, why don't you decloak and tell us who you are?
Okay, I'm Bert de Kouter, Belgian, here in the office, and it's dark outside. I've done all kinds of MOOCs, the C kind, the X kind, about six or seven in total. And later this year, I'm also, you know, I'm in the process of designing one for our organization and gathering a lot of input from a lot of people on how to do or not to do that for business.
Wonderful. George?
I'm George Siemens. I'm with Athabasca University, and I've been involved in a variety of different MOOCs for several years now. My interest it has been primarily in the academic space, but I'm involved with a few discussions over the last 6 months or so that are taking a business-oriented focus on MOOCs. And together with Dave Cormier and Bonnie Stewart, we're also writing a book on, well, based in MOOCs, but technically more about broader changes in education. Apparently, if we finish it up soon, that'll be published later this year.
Cool. Very cool. Stephen.
Hello, I'm Stephen Downs in beautiful, snowy Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. I work for the National Research Council as a researcher. I've been here for more than 10 years. Can you believe it? And I've done work with George and others in connectivism, MOOCs, and other such things. I'm not writing a book, but maybe that means I should be getting an agent or something.
Terry, you've written a book. Were you writing another one?
Had to click off that mute there. Yes, I'm a professor at Santa Clara University in the heart of the Silicon Valley. And we have kicked off one MOOC, but I haven't been allowed in because it filled up so fast. I've participated in a MOOC, the Google Advanced Search one, which was fabulous. And I've written one online workshop on the Udemy platform. And yes, I'm working on a new project beyond the Plugged-In Manager called Lead by Letting Go. And certainly the universities could learn by letting go a little bit. And I think MOOCs and the business are directly connected to that.
Great. Mark.
Hi, my name is Mark Finnan. I am the Chief Community Evangelist for SAP. Tongue-in-cheek, actually, and also founder and running the Future Salon. And I'm seeing big, big changes at SAP, and I think that's in general for corporations to rethink education and embracing MOOCs and the Hansa Plattner Institute, which is founded by the founder of SAP in Potsdam, has started to do some of these, and I think there's a big, big change coming in the next 5 years.
Thank you. Lal.
Hi, my name is Lal Jones-Bay. I am in business development with Coursera here in sunny Mountain View, California. I am involved in a number of our efforts to help Coursera students take advantage of their coursework and the things they learn and what they accomplish on the platform as a part of their professional aspirations and in their jobs and so on.
Jerry Mikulski.
Hey, I'm Jerry Mikulski. I'm in San Francisco, which is also pretty sunny right now. A little overcast. It's never as nice as Mountain View. I run REX, which is a Relationship Economy Expedition, a think and do tank looking at whether we're entering a new economy based on trust. I've been radicalized on education, more on which later. And then I published my brain online, which I wouldn't normally bring up right now, but it looks like my brain might actually be the subject of a MOOC being run by Katie Berner at University of Indiana, who's a specialist in visualization. She's doing a MOOC on visualization, and my brain is going to be one of her clients. So she's going to sic some students on my brain to see what they might do visualizing brain data in different ways.
Sales pitch.
If Kurt Bach were able to join us, he would probably correct you and say that's Indiana University rather than University of Indiana.
Thank you very much.
But, hi, I'm Jay Cross, and I run Internet Time Group, and I've participated in the Google MOOC, and I'm in the midst of a MOOC on complexity, and I'm interested in, frankly, the mashup of business and learning, because I see some big changes ahead, and I think the MOOC movement makes us question, well, hold it, you know, we can separate what universities do into pieces and go after one at a time. How about business? What's in it for us? I'm biased. I think there is a role for lessons from MOOCs. I didn't think so 6 months ago, so I'm in transition. Now, we have one more person, and I want him to introduce himself and to give us a brief definition of MOOC. So the guy who made up the term, Dave, introduce yourself.
Thanks, Jay. My name is Dave Cormier. I'm at the University of Prince Edward Island. I had the great fortune, actually, of being at CCK08, which was coined as the first MOOC that was done by the great work of George Siemens and Stephen Downs. And I was doing research around this stuff and community learning and stuff at the time, and came up with the term MOOC. And there's some other people. Brian Alexander also came up with an expression at the same time. Who actually did it first? I'm not sure. We're entirely sure. But massive, we're looking at something that is about scale and the idea that scale is different. The scale, the massiveness, gives an increased chance for connection. It also, in my mind, allows for the curriculum to more and more come from the participants of a course and less from the top down. When you look at open, that openness is not just about things being free, but also about open access and, in my mind, open syllabus. So the idea that the thing that you're going to be learning, the outcomes of the course aren't necessarily pre-described, that has certainly changed since the original first MOOCs that are running, but at first that's what we were looking at. Online, it's one that we sort of throw away a little bit sometimes, but you forget, I think, when you spend too much time on the internet, just how profound a difference that onlineness makes and how that makes a transition from scarcity to abundance. And when we're talking about learning, scarcity and abundance are two completely different playing fields. And I think that that online part there really brings that into focus. And the fourth one is course. And lots of people try to riff on course and say community or say all kinds of other things around that. And course is a word that's chosen very specifically because it applies structure. Anybody at any time can go out onto the internet and learn pretty much whatever they want at this point. What a MOOC does is pulls those, it's a stake in the ground, it's a cafe, it's a gathering place for learning with some kind of structure that's been put together by people ostensibly who've been down that road before that gives people a flag around which to work. So in a minute or so, that's my definition of massive open online courses, as we meant them initially, at least.
Fantastic. Thank you. Well, I've got a question to, you know, sort of kick things off, and anybody is able to take it. We did a survey, and we'll look at the results in a little bit. Only a few people were responding, I think 25 or something. But the business people, a lot of them said, no, I don't get it. I don't see why we'd ever do anything like this. We're proprietary. Well, hold it. If, I don't know, a million people are taking the Series 7 exam and God, probably 10 million are taking HIPAA training and healthcare and stuff like that, why on earth wouldn't you have sort of the CMOOC, the XMOOC, thank you, Stephen, a lecture by somebody who really can lecture well rather than some Yahoo in a motel room? I mean, to me, that's inevitable. Thoughts?
Well, I'm going to just dive in there on two quick points. One is we have to be quite careful if we try to make the education process excessively efficient, partly because efficiency is effective if we have clear targets with limited factors influencing achievement of those targets. Once you add this irritating thing called diversity in the form of humanity, suddenly efficiency can mean something only in terms of process, which is delivery. It can't mean efficiency in terms of the end result of the learner, because each learner is different. So that's just a quick point to frame the conversation. But additionally, you know, I can't see why businesses haven't gotten on the MOOC bandwagon in a far greater degree than they have. I mean, Google's run their, you know, how to search with Google MOOC, which I think was a great idea. But on certain levels, MOOCs are not necessarily that different, in a business setting at least, from advertising and marketing. You know, getting people acquainted with your product and becoming aware of your product. So I think there's a big potential for businesses not just to skill develop internally and get their staff up to speed, but also to improve their identity and relationship with their customers.
Yeah, I think
I'll jump in there just to go. Go ahead, Stephen.
I think there's two factors there, though, George. The first factor is control. You talk about marketing. Industry likes to control marketing. They like to control their image, and the MOOC is the antithesis of control. The second thing is cooperation. Businesses don't like cooperating with each other. They're in competition with each other, and MOOCs require cooperation.
A good example that I came across last summer, I got a call from the folks at Acquent, their communications company in the United States, and they wanted to run a MOOC to try to both train the people who provide services to them and also train their clients at the same time. And they made it open access to everybody. They made a deal with Pearson to put together some of the content. And now, granted, the thing that they were trying to learn is closer to the kind of stuff George was talking about, where the outcomes were a little bit more specific. But still, it was a nice example where a company decided that being first in the field, getting out there and getting their name out there in a really positive sense was worthwhile, maybe giving up some of that IP that they otherwise wouldn't necessarily clear out. So I think there are definitely examples of businesses doing this, but the one that I'm talking about is at thesummeroflearning.com, but there really aren't that many out there at this point, I don't think.
Well, I'll just respond to one of the Twitter folks. Mark Olert asks, how large does a company need to be before they should host an internal MOOC? And I guess my response, if I'd been able to type and talk at the same time, would be I would ask the question. I can see the role for an internal MOOC. It might not necessarily meet the scale definition, but I see this opportunity for creating new employees that are pre-trained, customers who have better understanding. I would just ask a very hard question about, does it need to be internal?
As I commented in the chat, to me, the term internal MOOC is a contradiction in terms.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. It's certainly in terms of intention.
I'll give people permission to talk about anything which is big and available to a lot of folks, even if it doesn't, you know, the tight definition of MOOC doesn't cover it.
Well, see, a big factor of MOOCs which make them effective is a function of scale and size. So you can't have 50 learners and call it a MOOC. And the reason you can't is because you don't have the opportunity for the network effects to kick in. And the network effects are essentially defined as, you know, if we've got 500 people together, we're going to have 500 people who have specific interests. They can cluster or subcluster into smaller groups where you get these individual spaces of creativity. It's that diversity that's so valuable. And the fact that people can say, you know what, you can't tell me what to do, because even if you shut down the Coursera discussion forum, I'm going to go out and I'm going to create a group in Google+, or I'm going to create a group on Facebook, or I'm going to create a Twitter hashtag. It's the ability for people to write their own interests into the curriculum or into the course. And because that scales, because there's enough people involved, they can form these subclusters. That's critical.
I want to throw in an option that we've got. I wrote a blog post last night on this. Can people see that? Yeah. I mean, so normally can I even do that? Hey.
Yeah.
normally, this is on the steering column of my BMW. And it broke, and I had to buy a whole new one for $1,000. So now I've got turn signal and lights and all of this crap, which is working fine, but I had to buy the whole deal. And I'm used to, well, when I went to college, you know, an interview with Princeton, a visit with Princeton, I took courses at Princeton, I went to their workshops and seminars, et cetera, et cetera. They issued the diploma and they tell people I've got it. All of these could be done by separate parties. I think the pieces of MOOCs can potentially be rearranged within business to meet their needs. So I'm back to, well, why the hell aren't they doing it? And I'll throw it open to any kind of discussion we care to have. In fact, maybe it's time for Mark to talk about the Hugo Plattner Institute. Mark, you up for it? You're muted.
Now I'm up for it.
There we go.
So, Hans Plattner Institute, which is really, really interesting. So SAP was founded by five people. One of them is Hans Plattner, and he semi-retired from SAP and then created a Hans Plattner Institute, so more or less a college university. And they have embraced MOOCs, and he has done one for in-memory database. And that is, on the other hand, also with SAP now coming out with SAP HANA over a year now and massively scaling this. One of the big problems with this massive change that is happening is to scale up the knowledge of that as fast as possible. And so the basis for MOOCs, I think, is a little bit something that, like Khan Academy, little knowledge nuggets or little knowledge sessions. And that is something that SAP has created, which is called the HANA Academy. And these are then something that others are putting together into courses. The only thing missing at the moment is more or less a framework of a MOOC for, we do get you up to speed in regards to HANA within the next 6 weeks, please join, and then others can, and then these smaller groups can form, and but I think this is just a matter of time that this will happen.
Sounds all right to me. Now, I know that Coursera's got some plans in this area. And while you can't tell us any secret, how do you look at the business opportunities at Coursera, Lal?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess a lot of our perspective here is informed by the way we've seen our students take advantage of their coursework and what they've accomplished and employ that in a professional setting. We found that many of our students are using the knowledge that they can pick up in their Coursera courses to learn new skills and so on that can be valuable on their jobs and so on. We are sort of employing a number of different tools and taking a number of different approaches to help them do that. For example, with things like our signature track, which we recently rolled out, where a student can tie their identity to their coursework and can tie their identity to the things that they accomplished in their Coursera course. And that gives them, at the end of the course, an identity verified credential that they can then take to their current employer, to a prospective employer, and say, hey, this is a course that I moved through, this is work that I completed. And that that credential has currency and allows them to take steps forward in their career.
Hold on, let me ask, does that certificate include, I'm like number 300 scorer on the final exam compared to the rest, or is it just I finished?
So the certificates are of multiple formats. In many cases, there's just two tiers. One is I have finished, and then the second is I have finished with distinction. Hmm. So often it's not quite as granular as you're asking, but there are often multiple tiers.
And what does it take to be with distinction?
So that is criteria that's defined by the professor, a certain level of completion criteria.
I'd like to jump in here, and I'll make the business connection. So as a faculty member in MBA programs and executive MBA programs, and then I do internal workshops for organizations as well, one of the things I think organizations will have to do, because with a change, you can never change just one thing. You have to make changes in the technology, in the people that you're talking with, and in the organizational practices, kind of in a mixed way. And at the moment, it seems like many organizations have ceded this certification process to the universities or to Coursera with these certificates. But I would rather see them take back some of the responsibility. So ostensibly, they're doing these things. They're interested in people's learning because they want to hire them, or they want to promote them or put them into a new position. So if they had internal mechanisms that actually judged capability rather than a certificate or a diploma, either through simulations, short-term contracts, something more behaviorally focused, then some of the certification issues kind of fall away.
But if I can jump in on that, Jay, I think, Terry, it's an important distinction you're making there, and I'll be a little more aggressive on it in that regard and say that I find it actually confuses me substantially that we are entering an era where we all seem to emphasize creativity is critical. We need people to be knowledge workers. Routine work is being outsourced or turned over to robots increasingly. So knowledge work means creative, motivated, intelligent people. So what do we do with these creative, motivated, intelligent people? We put them into the same damn chase after the frickin' certificate model that we have in our current education system. And to me, I just can't see how business leaders would take that approach. And to this date, and I'll be a bit of a bastard here, but I think it's a terrible mistake on the part of MOOCs to begin chasing the accreditation path, because all they're really saying is we're going to talk the language of innovation, but we're going to do exactly what we've always done.
So yeah, that's exactly right.
Sorry, one thing that never happens in school, not through grade school, not later, and we're stuck on that issue here, is nobody asks your peers about your capabilities. Like, the kids next to you know that you're stupid or you're great. Nobody's ever going to ask them, and it's part of the hidden curriculum of school that, you know, and this is happening now, we're seeing it in these adult sessions, because the cool stuff that's happening, interesting, Stephen, the cool thing that's happening here is that in a MOOC, all these little subgroups are forming, just as was described earlier, whether they're happening in the formal MOOC forums or whether they're happening on Twitter or somewhere outside. And these are people who can certify that you're good or not. And if we're going to be collaborating a lot and your reputation in your community of practice matters a lot, why are we not asking? And why aren't we rethinking a certification altogether, rather than saying the university should play for, you know, struggle for control over the certificate? No, the MOOC should just give a completion course. Is it completion with distinction or a ranking, you know, et cetera, et cetera? That's the other world of grades and pieces of paper. And what we care about here is are you a great colleague, and did you come up with great ideas, and did you master this stuff?
I think we've got agreement, at least across the three or four people that were jumping in that it's around the behaviors. And even companies like New Course Steel, which I have no idea what they're doing with MOOCs, but I do know that they care dramatically what the rest of the team thinks about an individual employee. You know, lives are at stake when you're dealing with molten steel, and if people don't feel safe around someone, they're able to actually move that person into a different role, so that the teams have great control. So I think some of the same ideas about, you know, moving responsibility closer to the work itself, so to the team members, you know, they boost general management, they certainly boost the value of learning in any form. And with MOOCs, we can build up a portfolio, so we don't have to look at a certificate. We can actually look at the work itself, perhaps.
Not to take this too far down the education line, but when I look at why a business would get involved in a MOOC. The idea of doing it for training seems like a crazy reason to get involved. If you want to train someone, that is, you know what skill you need them to get, putting them in a giant environment with a whole bunch of other people is not a way to, MOOCs are a terrible way to get those five people to do those five things. It's not a directed, connected kind of direct connection between those two things. What it's really good at is getting people to grow, create, shift, move, and connect and make new kinds of connections, because those are the advantages that come out of that model. As a business, you may want to start a MOOC to push your brand. I understand that makes total sense. For universities, business-wise, as a loss leader, makes total sense. But to send them out, if somebody wants to learn and train for those skills, they could do it on their own anyway. And if they aren't doing it, then they lack the responsibility to go ahead and do it. There's no reason to expect that they're suddenly going to have more responsibility when you put them in this model. To me, the real advantages for MOOCs for businesses is to get the people inside their organizations out into the world to meet other people like them so that they can grow as employees inside of their company, not in ways pre-described by the company, but in ways that the company's not sure about right now that allows them to become better participants and better contributors to that organization.
I have a radical solution that I'd like to describe, but I think Stephen was trying to break in. Did you have something to tag on here?
I just wanted to agree vigorously with Dave.
Okay. Go but for it, Dave!
But I would like to bring up the SAP example again. I mean, we are bringing out a new technology that we want to massively scale and worldwide scale, and I see MOOCs as the opportunity to bring people up to that base level to be able to implement these new technologies and to develop on top of these new technologies. I think that makes a ton of sense to make that in an environment that where people can join in and form their local groups and be then up to speed better because of these connections.
But I've never seen any group, any community learning online. I mean, I certainly haven't seen every community model possible. I know Jay's been doing this for 35 years online before I have. But sorry, Jay. But I've never seen self-organizing groups happen around things that aren't exciting. And if what you're talking about is trying to get people to base level one, I don't see groups getting together and getting excited about those kinds of things. I don't see communities forming out of that. I mean, if it's static, set information that you're trying to drill into people's head, if I understand what you're saying, that's not a community evolving thing.
That's not totally true. I
must have misunderstood.
I understand your point, but HANA is a new platform to build stuff on top. So it is enabling to you to tap into massive data sets and to bring you up onto that platform and then having the opportunity to use that platform for your ideas and to go forward in that. And that in a business environment and enabling you to bring food on the table of your family because you are now able to work in companies on interesting projects. That is exciting, and that is bringing people together locally too. I think we have to see whether that is really happening. But I think that's an enormous opportunity.
Here's the challenge, though, and I'll put it directly as a challenge to SAP. Is it SAP or SAP? I never know.
SAP is okay too.
Okay.
But yeah.
It's a real question because I've just never known. It's not like there isn't community around SAP out there. I'm putting right now into the chat area a link to a Stack Overflow website, How Do I Start Learning About SAP? And you know, it's one thing for the company to say, okay, we're going to create this MOOC. We're going to manage this MOOC. We're going to run this MOOC. It's going to reach business objectives. It's going to make people learn how to implement new product. That's very different from what's happening in places like Stack Overflow and out there on the web where it's the users who direct this. And is SAP ready to engage in a learning process that involves all of these external communities and is driven by them, even if it means they will be critical of SAP.
And if I can extend that, because I think the question is, I think we know the question there because we've seen examples of this in social, or the answer in social media. Not sure how many of you recall, several years ago, GM decided to initiate a Love Us on Social Media initiative. And so in the end, you could take a lovely GM vehicle and then put your own caption and share it on social media. And instead of everybody saying, oh, I love my, you know, huge, large GM vehicle, people would put little tags like, I'm compensating for a small penis, and then share that online. So it ended up being when you lose the message, which you do in open spaces, you can't control the message, which means you have to have some trust relationship. The best thing or the worst thing that social media will do is take an organization that isn't well connected to its end users, and it will expose them for that lack of connectivity and lack of understanding. So the same issue arises with MOOCs. So if you take a MOOC and you open it up online, if you're doing something other than being creative and generative with it, you're going to fail. I mean, it's going to be impossible to teach discrete base level knowledge with a MOOC format. And consider, when we first started with CCK08, our interest was to model how we thought individuals learn through social networked approaches in a digital era. And so that essentially means that we weren't interested in low-level knowledge such as naming nodes, you know, this is this chemical or this is this type of an atom. We wanted to really express complex integrative knowledge and how that gets acquired. And that doesn't get acquired through step-by-step processes or through getting a certificate. It gets acquired through discussion, debate, critical reflection, creation, making things. And that was the outcome of the course. And so if you're doing anything other than creating and making and generating, then I don't know if a MOOC is the ideal thing for a business to begin to adopt.
Hey, I want to jump in for a little bit because we're definitely coming from different places. When I look at what business needs, it's not the basic, linear, explicit knowledge stuff. I mean, increasingly, you can get that online. You know, you can go out for it. But it's dealing with complexity. And that takes working with others, having a structure, but then just jumping in and doing stuff. Picture this. Chase Bank, they hire, what, thousands of people every year. What if they said, hey, because you're not going to college because that costs too much or takes too long or whatever your reasoning, come to us as sort of a paid intern. And you can, you know, take along with hundreds of other people simultaneously the things that lead to your business degree. We're going to pay you less in the meantime because you're only working, you know, 75% time. But you end up, you get, you know, your degree from us. You know us. We get to see how you work. It's a whole different approach. And I think people would be happy to jump on board if it were convenient at work. I mean, I saw this work at University of Phoenix with thousands of people way before it was online. But just the convenience and the dedication to one company's problems. I'd like to shut down training departments and see some of these deeper, academically related, but experiential MOOCs, if you will. I'll shut up for a little. In fact, we're going to go to questions in just a moment. So if you're on the Twitter and looking at QMOOC, put in your questions now, and I'll ask my fellow participants up here in the front row to take a look at some of those, and let's answer what they're asking us.
I'll take a comment from our good friend Vipal Baxi. Hi, Viplav.
Coming to us
from New Delhi.
Namaste.
And he's talking about how corporations dislike uncertainty and the lack of control. They need to demonstrate ROI. I think that's going to be true of some and not true of some others, and I think that may end up being the deciding factor between who chooses to take the MOOC option, at least as we're presenting it. And I don't mean MOOC as we have lots and lots of people doing one thing, but MOOC including the words massive and open in the description. And if you look at, again, the to me, landmark statement by MIT in 2002 when they opened all their stuff where they said, we can't make money from content anymore. and so we're going to give it away. And I think that's going to be increasingly true for lots and lots of companies, not deep, dark, you know, secret IP stuff, but the general parts of their business and the way that they're thinking and growing. And I think those companies that make that leap to uncertainty being a good thing are going to be the ones who are going to be more effective and are going to find MOOCs to be something that succeeds with them. So I think VipLot, it's going to depend on which corporations we're talking about.
Okay, well, we have confirmation for your statement, Dave, that power is getting people outside of the organization. We have a comment that a MOOC is not a structurally collaborative construct unless learning communities are part of the course. Well, I can go along with that.
I would question that a little bit, actually. I would say that the benefit of a MOOC is you don't have to do anything you don't feel like doing. And so that means that if you want to collaborate with others, collaborate away. But I would say, you know, and I know today we're in the buzz of social learning, and that's an emphasis point in many levels, but some of my best learning has happened sitting in isolation and pretending to think and grappling with a complex problem that others, others informed me and gave me some direction on that. But I think it's a mistake to assume that MOOCs require community. MOOCs require individuals who can address their knowledge needs in roughly any way that they would like those addressed.
But one of those should be the ability to join community and hopefully a helping hand.
But there's nothing that ever prevents that. I mean, the whole point of the MOOCs that we created was that people could join community in whatever they wanted, whether it was in Second Life, Google Groups, or whatever. But we didn't make it part of the course, and it wasn't required. You know, and this idea that you have to be in communities, you have to collaborate in order to learn, is a thesis. It's not true for all people in all cases. And even if it is true for all people in all cases, the MOOC gives the person taking the course the opportunity to do it differently anyways, at their own risk.
Well, there are a number of comments in the tweet stream that say, well, you've got to have discipline. If you're going to be self-directed, well, you've got to take responsibility. Essentially, you have to become a pull learner. And I frankly think that's the way the world is going, that people are going to be taking responsibility for their own learning rather than sort of sitting in the classroom and, I don't know, Stockholm syndrome, taking the stuff that's pushed on them. So, yeah, I think it does take self-discipline, and I think people will have it. Looking through the questions.
I'd point out that if you don't take responsibility for your own learning, even in traditional settings, you're not going to be very successful either. I mean, you know, I've gone through the school and college and university and post-grad settings, and, you know, success has been all about being self-responsible and self-motivated. Just sitting there and listening to the instructor has never been a winning strategy.
True.
Well, and if that is one thing that MOOCs bring to the world, is this much greater emphasis on self-determination and responsibility for your own learning, then I am the biggest proponent there can possibly be. You know, I've shifted my face-to-face classes, which are all with working MBAs, to be about, I'm going to give you some content, but I'm cherry-picking the content. It's not all the content. Your job is to learn how to learn this material going forward. And in fact, that's the only way you get an A in my class, is that you aren't just a cook. You have to become the Iron Chef of the topics. And it's about the Iron Chef doing something that someone else might not have thought of. That's really where great value gets created.
So, and this adds additional layer of I'm going to use the word again, complexity and really frustration for end users. So if we look at much of traditional education, a good portion of it is involved with what I would probably call naming nodes. And that's giving, you know, being able to name things by looking at them. So much of it's like, oh, that's a noun, that's a verb, that's it. But real learning, and even traditionally this has been the case, depth and quality of learning requires understanding how these nodes are connected and how they interact with one another when there is such a thing as the development of depth of knowledge. And so innovation is novel patterns of connection and new ways of seeing things. And that's true technologically, not just conceptually. You know, the development of the steam engine is a terrific example of remixing and pulling ideas together from a variety of different places and creating something novel. And it's that kind of activity that MOOCs need to prepare learners for, is the ability to stop just teaching them to name things. You know, you take a MOOC through Coursera, and I love Coursera. I've taken numerous of their courses, finished none. And the experience of a Coursera course is at least you learn what social network analysis. You learn the terms, you learn the concept, you can speak the language. Now, in my eyes, that's a low level of learning when they go out, and now they start to apply that, and they create something new with it, or they restructure business processes based on what they learned through the social network analysis course. That's where it's about knowledge application. And if MOOCs do anything, it's about getting past naming things into creating and generating new things.
I want to go back to Terry for a moment, because Terry, I know you're interested in, well, let's look ahead 5 years, and the hiring manager legitimizes whether or not the deed was done, I think. Could you talk with us a little bit about assessment by other than somebody grading a course?
Well, I see two big opportunities, and the ideas of behavioral assessment for a hiring decision, you know, are from the 70s and maybe even earlier. But I think we have opportunities now, given that it's so much easier to create simulations, it's so much easier for people to share past work, that those kinds of behaviors don't even have to take place right during the interview, but they do need to be thoughtful. And so if the issue is, can this person work in this team, then let's let them work in the team. Basketball teams do that when they interview their players. They put them together on the court with the rest of the players. So the idea is not only that hiring managers have to do more to think about what are the appropriate mechanisms for assessing capability in the job that the person's being brought into and in the job that they think they're going to grow into, but also that the individual should be creating a portfolio. And I really, you know, I keep an eye on LinkedIn because they may be the place where we're able to do this better. The idea that I can share a work portfolio, share presentations, share a video of a presentation that I gave may become more and more important. You know, Google certainly hires people based on hackathons. They ask people to code on the spot because they know that those are actually behaviors that matter.
By the way, a number of you took part in a survey, and these are the results with, you know, 25 people, but I think it represents what the audience and presenters together have as combined experience. 28% haven't taken a MOOC. 12% took one session. 12% went halfway through. 24% completed some lessons. 8% awarded a certificate. There was a question on a tweet stream. Well, hold it. 1% to 2% completion rate. What's with that? Well, if you've got 50,000 people, that's 500 people who stuck with it. So I'm not as worried about completion rates, frankly, as some are. I've got to get over to my other screen to pull up a few other things. What sort of MOOC was it? Well, Coursera had a lot of fans, 60% of those who attended MOOCs. What was the subject matter? How to, skill-focused, humanities. Check all that apply. Well, people are generally very positive about their MOOC experience. In fact, what's positive? I like distance education. I've only da-da-da-da-da. Actually, I'm not going to read this to you. I'm going to see what else is there. Are MOOCs going to be important in the business world? Well, 8% disagree, 25% are undecided, and most of the people here, two-thirds of us, think that, yeah, they're going to be important in the business world. There's not a lot of talk in the business world about this right now. Corporations who get on the MOOC bandwagon, well, we have agreement plus strong agreement, adding up to what, 41%. So that's what your peers said. What do we think of that?
I think the point that you make, Jay, about the number of the completion number is critical. And I'm having this discussion with about five people on Twitter right now. The completion numbers are exactly why MOOCs are not effective for training for companies. If you want to have 50,000 people go, let's say you have a company and there are 50,000 people in it, and you want them all to learn that thing over there, and you get a completion rate of 2%, it's not good for your company because, you know, 98% of the people probably didn't get that one thing you wanted to teach them. If you let your employees join in the MOOCs, or you host one yourself, and maybe they join 10 and complete one, they have experiences that they've gained in those different places that can make them better employees. And that, to me, is the distinction that we're looking at. Very difficult to get a MOOC to have those 100 people learn those 100 things. And that that completion rate thing, to me, brings that right into focus.
Well, Dave, I'd turn it around just a little bit. If I were the organization, I'd be saying, here are the capabilities you need to have, and here are five different ways you can go get those capabilities. You can go do the MOOC. You can do the online training that we've bought. You can come in and do the training. You could do a journeyman approach. But to have the focus be on the capabilities themselves and not how that person learns it.
To jump in here to Terry's point, that's actually something that we've seen a fair bit of when companies will reach out to us with an interest in leveraging the courses that are on Coursera for the development of their employees. They'll want to do things like, say, can we just point our employees to specific courses? And again, this will be a resource for a certain piece of the skills that you need to use. Companies are reaching out asking for sort of a number of different ways that they can possibly incorporate what we're doing, but that's one of the big ways. Like, can this just be a development resource for our employees?
Well, and it's lovely because it gives people the opportunity to be self-directed and to know the kind of learning environment that they need to be successful.
I think that...
Can we shift a little bit to...
Sorry, George, can I just make one point?
I guess.
I think that's a great financial model for Coursera. I don't think that makes it a MOOC. I think I totally understand what you're talking about. Atomic Learning, for instance, has been doing this for 10 years. Great financial model for Coursera to also make money doing other things, but I don't think that that's a MOOC. Anyway, go ahead, George.
I just want to know if we could maybe transition the chat a little bit to talking about design, because that's something that isn't often addressed. And one of the big things with the MOOC conversation is there's a way, you know, the MOOC talk is, I don't know, I need one of those too damn high rent poster memes or something going on to communicate this. But the chat about MOOCs is far outpaces what people are doing. And I think about half the time talking should be spent doing something MOOC-ish. So there's a question that Brandon Carson threw out on Twitter, or a comment, really, that just says, you know, business needs agility. A MOOC can provide a certain sense of agile design. And I think that's definitely a key element there, is when we're starting to think about how do you design and how do you put MOOCs together. We've been somewhat laissez-faire in our approach with courses online. Certainly what Coursera and Udacity and others are doing is more structured and more traditional. But hang up that sign again, Dave. I want to see it because it's got it. All right, fine. You're being very coy. And so that's the challenge, I think, is designing a model that allows people to quickly and rapidly and iteratively roll out these MOOC formats. I'd like to hear what others are doing in their MOOC design processes.
Well, Brandon said something else, too, that businesses are still trying to figure out mobile, Jay. MOOCs are going to blow their heads off. I think maybe it's blow HR's head off, not blow business's head off. Because businesses can figure things out.
Yeah, my thinking is that MOOCs might change business more than business change MOOCs. a lot of the problems that businesses have with MOOCs, in my opinion, and this includes the design of them, is a result of the dysfunction of business. I mean, the nature of business is hierarchical, closed, non-diverse. I just tweeted, if businesses demand agility so much, why do they resist it so? All the things that MOOCs are, businesses aren't. And I think over time, businesses that adopt as part of their internal structure, more MOOC-like methods where management and production are based on cooperation rather than command and control, also known as collaboration, I think we'll see more effective and more competitive businesses.
Well, I'm not going to talk future business with you, Stephen, because we know where we'll end up. But I do note a comment that came in, and I think it's people who missed the beginning of our discussion. Can somebody give a definition of a MOOC? So for newcomers, Dave, can you trot out a MOOC definition for us again?
Sure.
Ring, 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 ring.
Watch the recording, people. Watch the recording. Come on.
No. We're in midstream,
open.
You know.
Give them
20
open.
Seconds.
Embrace it.
I just used up my 20 seconds. Massive open online course. Massive meaning big. Scale is different. Open meaning open more than free. Open curriculum. Open objectives. Online meaning the movement from scarcity to abundance that happens when we have access to all these things. Course meaning something structured.
Thank you, Dave. Boy, you've got that down.
Hey, Dave, why don't you drop in a URL to that EDUCAUSE article we did? I think that sort of covers, that was a decent intro to it. Especially the point about eventedness. There's a way in which a MOOC is different from a community.
Put it in there and I'll put it on the tweet stream.
Do it, Dave.
I think there's a real distinction to be drawn, though, between the MOOCs that Dave, George, and I talk about, and the MOOCs that people from Coursera or even SAP would be talking about. I created the distinction between CMOOCs and XMOOCs a while back to draw that. But, I mean, I think the XMOOC people who are represented here on this conversation are being a bit quiet. And precisely in the areas where the XMOOCs are not like CMOOCs. And it'd be interesting to hear some of their responses. But what about diversity? What about openness? Are the Coursera MOOCs, for example, actually open? What about people choosing their own objectives and their own course materials and all of that? What about the idea that a MOOC is more than just a bunch of videos posted, even if they're videos by really good presenters? What's the difference between a MOOC and TED? What's the difference between a MOOC and Khan Academy? What's the difference between a MOOC and YouTube? You know, these sorts of questions. I think we have the makings here of a good CMOOC versus XMOOC discussion. We shouldn't waste that opportunity.
Well, are we going to...
Jay, I'm going to dive in, and I've got to stop my Twitter stream long enough so I don't lose it. So Coach Carol posts regarding QMOOC, you know, what do you call a MOOC when blended with a course, a community, and extended networks? And I just had to say, a brave new world. You know, I hope that's where we go.
So we call that a MOOC.
Well, I tell you what, we've spent almost an hour talking about MOOCs. Mm-hmm. And I sense we could talk about MOOCs for another couple of hours. We wouldn't have any viewers left, but we'd have a good time. But let me ask people to put in the tweet stream, you know, comment. Is this valuable? Should we continue this another time, or have we pretty well hammered it out? Do people have a viewpoint on MOOCs plus business that they didn't have before? And my tweet stream is not updating. Well, host failed. Well, that's a new one. Okay. Few comments. Well, we may have moos instead of mooks and save Dave some time. I will, on the learning conversation page, and, you know, please join up. I think we've got 470 members so far. But I'll list URLs to the people who've been participating today. and to some of the resources we've come up with, and we can continue the conversations there. And if there's a call for other particular topics, I see Mark Britz has said we could go deeper into design, examples in corporate setting. I agree with that. You know, let's just do that. We'll figure out a time for it. Maybe you can join us, Mark. Still want to hear from the ex-MOOCers. Yeah, I sort of ran out of slots because only 10 people can sit here. So maybe, Law, what do you think? If we've got Udacity, Udemy, edX, maybe somebody from TED, what the hell? Would people be interested in such a thing?
Yes, but include some critics too.
Okay. Good point. Good point. It's too bad John Taylor Gatto is not fully functioning these days, but I'd love to get his take. I think I know what it would be, but it might break my monitor. I don't know. People know Jay, John Taylor?
I could channel a little bit of Gatto if you want.
go ahead. Just give us, you know, a little soupçon of Gatto.
So here's a little Gatto bisque. So we talked earlier, I think it was Stephen who brought up this notion that we want people to take ownership of their learning. And schools are designed to create consumers and factory workers. We imported the Prussian military model of education that was designed for Bismarck, and we dropped it wholesale on this country, a country that had hundreds of thousands of one-room schoolhouses that were working really, really well and turning out very educated people who were good citizens. Schools are designed to teach what I call the new OCD, which is obedience, compliance, and dependence. And the way they do this is called the hidden curriculum. It's very subtle. Mm-hmm. It's like whenever the bell rings, we want you to drop your flow and go do something else on our dictate. And we're going to measure your performance, grade and score you according to people outside this room who don't give a damn, will never meet you, don't give a damn about who you are. You can never be allowed to be alone someplace. You need a note from mom, a note from the doctor, a chaperone, a hall pass. All these lessons are unspoken, and they are buried in the structure of how schools work. And you may be thinking, oh, I'm talking about grade schools, but it turns out that we carry this little structure all the way through. There's a bell that rings every hour right through college, right through the rest of your life. So you're bouncing like a pachinko ball through learning whatever it is you can hope to catch as you learn. So this very structures of compulsory education as we have designed it, and we as some people before us, but we're kind of responsible now, are congenitally flawed. And they don't lead to good learning experiences, and yet we struggle through and we have brilliant people who get degrees and invent stuff. So that was sort of the, maybe more the chowder than the bisque, but still, it's a piece.
I'll make sure that people get the URL for Gatto's work. It is stunning to read.
But I think that the MOOCs actually are a hopeful sign, because the MOOCs are where I'm self-paced much more, where I decide to finish or not finish, where I form groups to learn together or not. And I think that's a hopeful sign, and I think John Taylor Gatto would agree with that.
I think when you look back at the stuff that Pestalozzi was doing in the late 18th century and the way that our modern educational system come together, this goes back to the way that George started this conversation, his part of the conversation, and that's that there was a really clear goal that they had. He wanted to have the people in Switzerland, the poor people in Switzerland, reading and writing. And those were observable goals, and there were targets that people could hit. And in order to do that, he broke the ideas of reading and writing into little tiny objects that were served up piece by piece in order, and this is a critical part, so that people who didn't understand them could still teach them. Mm-hmm. Right? Those early textbooks were designed that way. Our educational system is still rife with that transition to object teaching, piece by piece, disconnected pieces, and also really a learning system that totally takes responsibility not only away from the student, but from the educator as well.
Well, I tell you, we have heard from people in the Treach stream, and they want more designers, more critics, more business people, and I want more women. So, what is it, a portfolio? No, I won't go there. But we're going to end this conversation right now, and we will pick it up on the learning community. Voice your needs, your cares, your answers over there. And I think it's undoubtedly we're going to have some other sessions on this topic. I really want to thank the participants. I mean, this is, we have the rock stars of Mookdom with us today. Any final wrap-up comments before we close this one off and end broadcast? Hey, Dave.
Bye.
Was that bye or was that end? That looks like
that
it's
was
the end.
Bye.
Okay. Adios, amigos. Until next time, thank you very
bye
much
bye
for joining us. Bye. Bye-bye. Hey. There it is.
Oh, dang. I was too slow with my music. I was going to play you a music outro, but there it is.
Oh, well, actually, the broadcast has been terminated, but we're still on. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah.
Whoa, well, that makes us much more valuable. Well, thanks so much. Thanks, Mark, Terry, Stephen.
Thanks, all. Bye-bye.
Until next
thanks
time
for organizing.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you later, Jay. And you're on Ed Radio. We're going to go back to the music. Enjoy.